No Man's Land by John Buchan. 1. The Shealing of Pharaoh. It was with a light heart and a pleasing consciousness of holiday that I set out from the inn at Allamure to tramp my 15 miles into the unknown. I walked slowly, for I carried my equipment on my back. My basket, fly books and rods, my plaid of Grant Tartan, for I boast myself a distant kinsman of that house, and my great staff, which had tried ere then the front of the steeper Alps. A small valise with books and some changes of linen clothing had been sent on ahead in the shepherd's own hands. It was as yet early April, and before me lay 4 weeks of freedom, 28 blessed days in which to take fish and smoke the pipe of idleness. A week of modest enjoyment thereafter in town had finished the work, and I drank in the sharp moorish air like a thirsty man who has been forewandered among deserts. I am a man of varied tastes and a score of interests. As an undergraduate, I had been filled with the old mania for the complete life. I distinguished myself in the schools, rode in my college 8, and reached the distinction of practising for 3 weeks in the trials. I had dabbled in a score of learned activities, and when the time came that I won the inevitable St. Chad's Fellowship on my chaotic acquirements, and I found myself compelled to select if I would pursue a scholar's life, I had some toil in finding my vocation. In the end, I resolved that the ancient life of the North, of the Celts and the Northmen and the unknown Pictish tribes, held for me the chief fascination. I had acquired a smattering of Gaelic, having been brought up as a boy in Lochaber, and now I set myself to increase my store of languages. I mastered Erse and Icelandic, and my first book, a monograph on the probable Celtic elements in the Eddy songs, brought me the praise of scholars and the deputy professor's chair of Northern Antiquities. So much for Oxford. My vacations had been spent mainly in the north, in Ireland, Scotland and the Isles, in Scandinavia and Iceland, once even the far limits of Finland. I was a keen sportsman of a sort, an old experienced fisher, a fair shot with gun and rifle, and in my hillcraft I might well stand comparison with most men. April has ever seemed to me the finest season of the year, even in our cold northern altitudes, and the memory of many bright Aprils had brought me up from the south on the night before to Allerfoot, whence a dogcart had taken me up Glen Aller to the inn at Allamure. And now the same desire had set me on the heather with my face to the cold brown hills. You are to picture a sort of plateau, benty and rock-strewn, running ridgewise above a chain of little peaty locks and a vast tract of inexorable bog. In a mile, the ridge ceased in a shoulder of hill, and over this lay the head of another glen, with the same doleful accompaniment of sunless locks, mosses, and a shining and resolute water. East and west and north, in every direction save the south, rose walls of gashed and serrated hills. It was a grey day, with blinks of sun, and when a ray chanced to fall on one of the great faces, lines of light and colour sprang into being, which told of mica and granite. I was in high spirits, as on the eve of holiday. I had breakfasted excellently on eggs and salmon steaks. I had no cares to speak of, and my prospects were not uninviting. But in spite of myself, the landscape began to take me in thrall and crush me. The silent, vanished peoples of the hills seemed to be stirring. Dark, primeval faces seemed to stare at me from behind boulders and jags of rock. The place was so still, so free from the cheerful clamour of nesting birds, that it seemed a temenos, sacred to some old-world god. At my feet the locks lapped ceaselessly, but the waters were so dark that one could not see bottom a foot from the edge. On my right the links of green told of snake-like mires waiting to crush the unwary wanderer. It seemed to me for the moment a land of death, where the tongues of the dead cried aloud for recognition. My whole morning's walk was full of such fancies. I lit a pipe to cheer me, but the things would not be got rid of. I thought of the Gaels who had held those fastnesses. I thought of the Britons before them who yielded to their advent.